Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Well, you can laugh. I'm the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist. But having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
When did you know that?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'd say it to your face, not say it to now.
Come down to Anfield and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawny man?
We may not have had the momentous Irish sporting day many of us were hoping for on Saturday with Katie Taylor and the Leinster rugby team both beaten, but the very next day, Evan Ferguson lifted the spirits with 2 goals for Brighton that sent them into Europe for the first time in the club's history, took his tally for the season to 10 goals in all competitions since coming into the team mid-season, and offered a timely reminder that some momentous Irish football days may not be too far away if he realises his potential on the international stage. Welcome to Monday's Second Caps Football Podcast. Hey guys.
Hey,
how's it going? How are you doing?
Ferguson's improvement has been incredible, says his manager Roberto De Zerbi. He's playing like an old player. But he is only 18.
Like an old player.
I presume he means that in the nicest possible way.
Yeah. A slightly older player.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's
like
playing
like 24-year-old.
Exactly. He's not quite at the end of his career just yet. You know, he's had a couple of injuries already this season, so it's nice to see him bouncing back.
Yeah,
before the end
strong.
Of it.
I really like the 2 goals were brilliant. I mean, I know the first goal goes through the goalkeepers. You can say, well, this is a goalkeeper. But look at the way that he takes the ball from McAllister. And he already knows what he's going to do. He's like, I have space to shoot here. They seem quite casual about this situation. Takes it, controls it, and then a really quick touch to get it out from his feet, and then just whacks it. Mm-hmm. And you go, what? It's good to hear a ball hit the net that hard,
yeah.
Having gone through a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
The second goal also was brilliant. I mean, it was Matoma's.
Yeah, you got to give Matoma some credit for setting up
some.
But what to be there, you know, he's keeping up with Matoma all the way, and then to steer the finish into the corner is absolutely brilliant. So
this is it. And bearing in mind the circumstances, because Brighton have been running out of gas. I mean, a couple of
every second game.
I know. Consistency is what's gone. Really, they'll still hockey a team. No bother. Mm. Yeah, they'll stick 6 goals on someone if they want, but then they'll also get beaten 5-1 by Everton. Was that 5-1?
Mm. Yeah.
What a remarkable result! If that's what keeps Everton up.
4-1 by Newcastle as well. Likely, of course.
Yeah, and then they always do come back then and generally win the game afterwards. But my point is, there was a lot that you saw by how jubilant the scenes were afterwards, how much was at stake for Brighton getting it done with a little bit to spare. And now they're talking to Zerbi saying, we need to get into the Europa League. Forget about the Conference League. Brighton's too big for the Conference League. We're going for the Europa League proper. The fact that Ferguson is 18 years of age and is as calm as he was in those situations and just as confident that, of course, if chances fall to me, I'll bury him. And I agree with you on that first finish. I actually thought that was the more impressive one, because the second one was more obvious what
it was an easier chance, which he made to look easier than it was.
The first one's just exactly, it's the intent. And I don't think goalkeepers like that when a player who can hit a ball hard shifts it out of their feet early and takes a shot on. I saw him being compared. Kane is the most common comparison in the first few months of his career, but I saw Shearer pop up over the weekend. That certainly would have been an Alan Shearer move to get the shot off early and hard. I'll take either of those comparisons.
Yeah,
to be fair.
Either of those will be fine.
Some of the things he did reminded me more of Rooney, actually. His kind of style. Some of the shots, has he scored a long range shot yet? He's hit the bar a couple of times with them. There was one particular, was it against Everton, the game that he got injured in?
Yeah, he hit a dinger against the bar there. That was kind of a long range shot, the first goal, yes.
Okay, so we've name checked the three top goal scorers in the history of the Premier League. Very short.
Not getting too over the top about this lad.
Yeah.
But there he is.
No, he's a bit bigger than Rooney, to be fair. But he's the player who, and I mean, not just because I saw him talk about how Wayne Rooney is his hero. You know, someone can be your hero and you not be anything like them.
It's true.
Why are you looking at me like that for? Am I supposed to name my hero?
Well, I don't.
Like what? Like Florence Nightingale?
Well, wasn't sure. We only had Ronnie O'Sullivan.
That doesn't mean that, you know, I share a love of, you know, medicine.
I would have been surprised to hear that Ronnie O'Sullivan idolised Steve Davis, for example, when you would think that the Hurricane Higgins or Jimmy White would have been the ones. But there you go.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
The title is Manchester City's. The Champions League race will probably be done before the final day if Man United get even a point against Chelsea on Thursday night. So things are fizzling out somewhat. It looks like which one of Leeds and Everton, these great clubs, go down. That might be the major question to be decided on the final day of the season. So we're going to jazz up our coverage of the final week on the World Service by finally pitting Ken and Damien Delaney against one another in a no-holds-barred debating death match on the subject of whether Trent very niche subject of whether Trent Alexander-Arnold in midfield is the future for Liverpool.
Cheep, 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 cheep. Bark, 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 bark.
Yes, that was Ken's reaction when Damien had to rain check a couple of weeks ago.
Cheep, 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 cheep. Bark, 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 bark.
That's puerile, infantile, and it did the trick. Damien Delaney appears this week.
Damien will be on this week. That's for members only, secondcaptains.com. €5 a month plus VAT if you want to become a member. What else happened over the weekend, Ken? Man City are champions, I guess, is one obvious starting
Nottingham
point.
Forest are a Premier League team.
Yeah,
what a few days it's been for West Ham United, by the way.
There you go.
These are great days for West Ham United. From I don't know if you saw the Conference League on Thursday. They got past Alkmaar, AZ Alkmaar, to get to the final. But there was then this incredible Helms Deep scene of heroics in the stands where Knowlesy, the now legendary West Ham fan, single-handedly beat back an onrushing horde of AZ ultras who, according to legend, were trying to get in and attack the players' families. And in fairness, there was a bit of this going on because I also saw like Lucas Paqueta embroiled in like a full-on fight with, you know, this was like a proper scene of disorder that was happening.
Because a few of the West Ham players went in to, because their family were in there, to try to
Help they the didn't know about Knowlesy. See, they didn't know the
mountainous
of
figure of Knowlesy at the top of the stairs just belting everyone who came.
It was a hell of a scene.
It was phenomenal. Yeah. Hodor. No, nobody could get past this guy. He is a folk hero. You know, I saw people sort of saying, this guy should lead the players out at the end of the season.
Yeah, yeah.
And he should.
He should. He definitely should. There's not enough of that in football these days.
And then West Ham, I think, you know, the spirit of
Nolte. He hasn't been milkshake ducked, I think, over the weekend. That was my concern about Nolte.
No, that hasn't happened yet.
I'm glad to hear it.
But the West Ham then obviously battered Leeds. Poor Leeds. Leeds scored a goal from a nice goal. volleyed in directly from a corner, from a throw, I should say.
Yeah, which you don't see happen too often.
No. I saw Michael Cox. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Ronnie Whelan, mate.
That's exactly what I clicked on it and it was the first reply. Oh, yeah, fair enough. Yes. We
don't
remember.
Forget, do we?
We remember.
Coxie, yeah.
But, yeah, there was quite a good moment also with Sam Allardyce.
The £5
trying
note.
To pay off the linesman or whatever. But now it looks as though Leeds are screwed because I think Everton are going to get away with it again. I think Everton are probably
going to get away with it.
I think they're going to get away with it.
Every point in the Premier League is hard earned.
Well,
and
so
when the tallies come in,
the situation here is just that Everton are 2 points clear of Leeds at the moment. Everton just outside the relegation zone, and the goal difference, they're 3 goals better off.
Mm. And they've Bournemouth on Sunday.
So Leeds need to win, basically.
Everton just need to win, and they're playing Bournemouth.
Leeds need to win and hope, unless they win by a landslide, they would have to hope that Everton lose.
Don't win. They need a better result than Everton.
Mm. Well, more than that, because even if Everton got a draw, they'd be okay on goal difference between the two, unless Leeds won by a few goals.
Well, there's 2 points in them, so Leeds have to win. Regardless.
No, Leeds have to win regardless. It's just what Everton would have to do in that situation. Leicester's still in it as well, obviously. Like, you know, if they were to somehow get a result against Newcastle tonight, they're another point back from Leeds. But they've got the 2 games left, including this game in hand.
Yeah.
It's likely they'll lose and be almost done. So, yeah.
A 3-goal win for Leeds against Tottenham would be enough if Everton only drew.
Yeah.
That would do it for them.
That would
be
a spectacular way to stay up.
All they need to do is beat Tottenham by 3. And Tottenham... Tottenham have wanted this season to be over for a long time, you know, and got completely, well, destroyed by Brentford and Bumo. There was 2 great goals in that game and 2 kind of, not great goals, where Tottenham made mistakes. Anyway, I suppose we should talk at this point about Manchester City.
I do just want to reiterate the point that this I made somewhat tongue-in-cheek maybe a couple of weeks ago, but this is Harry Kane's best ever season in the Premier League. To score 28 goals in a brutal team where his attacking support players have become shadows of themselves and there's no defensive structure and managers are leaving and all sorts going on. Maybe he just really, really wants to get out of there. He wants to remind Manchester United or whoever it is that he's still as good as God. But to score 28 goals, is this his best scoring season now? He's just one off his best scoring season.
He scored 29 in 2017.
It would be absolute golden boot material in any other season before the arrival of a certain Manchester City player, which leads us on, Ken, to the champions once again.
The champions. Manchester City, the champions. Big pitch invasion at the Etihad, as is tradition.
They were warned against it this time?
Yeah, because of the ugly scenes on last year. The disturbing scenes when it was a pitch invasion, which is, fine. But then one of the fans started attacking the Villa goalkeeper, Robin Olsen, which wasn't fine.
That is one of the reasons that authorities don't like pitch invasions. It's happened in the GAA at Croke Park. Players getting...
Well, authorities don't like pitch invasions because pitch invasions are people being excited and, you know, doing the stuff of excitement. It's great. And the authorities can't control it. That's why they hate it, don't it's true. I mean, you don't get that. I mean, it used to be a normal kind of a thing. You know, even at the World Cup final. You know, if you think of Maradona or Pele being carried around on the shoulders of, like, pitch invaders...
We saw, of course, Napoli. Like they won the Serie A away. That was
an intimidating one.
It was quite intimidating. It's like, I think you should give me your jersey, Napoli player.
And those shorts while you're at it.
No, I'm going to actually, you know what? I'm going to take that jersey, in fact. So you're just going to take it off and give it to me right now.
Jesus, you're in serious shape.
Yeah.
Is it? I don't know. I mean, it's these things have all been so corrupted now. I mean, people looking for the clothes of the Napoli players are they, you know, is this pair of shorts going to get mounted on the wall of some little restaurant in Naples, you know, in a frame?
Probably.
Or is it going on eBay to, you know what I mean? Like, there's always this kind of... Everyone in the City pitch invasion yesterday was filming themselves. Now, I know to talk about this is, like, the biggest cliche of all time. You know, it's like, look at everyone, you know, no phones, just living in the moment. It's like it's a cliche from several years ago, you know. But, like, still, when you see everyone kind of running on and filming it, you're like, this is... That's why this is happening now. Mm. You know what I mean? It's like, it's for
content. They might as well just wear content. They might as well just wear the GoPro.
The wearables are going to be coming soon. People behave as normal.
I mean, we understand you're going to have to record every living moment of your life anyway. So
well, a lot of the soldiers the are GoPro doing on, it. You know, people are kind of getting more used to first person footage now, and you know, the Google Glass thing didn't really take off because everyone was like, this is really creepy. And, you know, at some level, people kind of had it gave people a no feeling.
Yeah.
You know, this Google Glass thing. But, you know, remember the mobile phones? I mean, you maybe you don't remember. Well, but when people first got mobile phones, it was kind of a bit like...
No, I'm not going to have a mobile phone. No.
Yeah.
No. I had a friend who lasted until like 2002 with this. No, I'm not going to.
Yeah. Or even taking photos with them. I do remember at the start, honestly saying, sure, what do I need a camera? If I want to take a photograph, I'll bring a camera out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if I want to use my phone, I'll use my phone. Thinking, look at these smart arses, but they're taking photographs on their phone.
They'll why combine it into one handy device when I can have two bulging
exactly.
pockets?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, look, it was, this is all, this is the way all these things are now. You know, is it a kind of a real thing that you're watching, or is it just a thing people are doing to make it look that way on the cameras? And is there actually any meaningful difference between those two things anymore?
That's hard to know.
City, of course, have obviously knew they'd won the league. I mean, they needed to win two, then they needed to win one, then they actually didn't need to get another point because Arsenal just ceased. Arsenal stars just stopped.
Declared.
Yeah, they down tools, and it was finished. Before they got on the pitch, and that's how they were able to, you know, it was like, oh, is this the greatest bench of all time? And there was like £500 million worth of players sitting on the bench. And actually, the Chelsea bench wasn't far off either. So there was nearly £1 billion worth of substitutes in that game. And City were given some of the lesser lights to run out. People like Julian Alvarez and Phil Foden.
Your Phil Foden
and Riyad Mahrez, who would all get into every other Premier League team. I mean, is that true? Is it these three players would each be a first team player at every other Premier League team? I mean, Mahrez, to be fair, is a first team player.
Mahrez wouldn't get into the Arsenal team, the first team.
I don't think they might find a place for him. Riyad.
Saka and Martinelli.
Yeah, there are some players who have some clubs, I suppose, who have players on the, you know, maybe a player on their level. Mm. But every other club in the Premier League team, I think, is playing one of these guys at least in their first team. I'm downgrading.
You are downgrading, like at a rate of knots.
This is the.
You don't watch out. There's going to be a hole in the floor underneath your chair there. But
the
anyway,
subs bench. but look, I mean, so we've had complaints from people on. We had complaints. If you remember, when Man City beat Arsenal 4-1. Well, how did you not talk about all the? You know, sure they scored four goals, but what about the 115 charges of cheating? We've also had complaints about, oh, everyone's just talking about the cheating now. You know, maybe I don't know if you've got any of those.
I've got one here, Ken. Let's do an email.
I've got a call here. It says, you're the most boring, predictable, condescending interviewer around. Go back to lecturing. You have the charisma of a sick bag.
Oh God.
That's just it. I just mentioned, not you, no me.
Okay, ain't nobody f***ing with my click, 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 click. Ain't nobody fresher than my mom.
We don't normally broadcast all the stuff that comes from scum around the country.
A sort of defence of Man City by a sort of non-biased fan. Cass Crockett emails. Hi lads, as a long-time Man City supporter who has many mixed feelings about my club and the current state of English football, I understand some of the criticism of City, but I really feel a lot of it is incoherent, misleading and a little hysterical. Here's where I think the coverage of your show and everywhere else is lacking. And he helpfully separates it into three different sections. FFP. The stated purpose of FFP was to stop clubs putting themselves in financial risk of collapse. The investment in Man City was done in such a way that we are an extremely stable club and will continue to be so without any further investment. So isn't it fair to say we followed the spirit of the law, if not the letter of the law? Increased competition. If the big clubs at the time of FFP introduction had fully had their way, we'd have the same four clubs in England qualifying for the Champions League every year. The money you get from being in the Champions League would mean nobody else could ever challenge them. Shouldn't the average football fan be delighted that City's investment has shaken up English football and that there are different teams qualifying for the Champions League each season. And then footballing matters. After discussing FFP, the conversation normally moves on to the football side of things. Whether it's Miguel Delaney, Rory Smith or yourselves, City's football dominance is always explained as if they've spent 10 times more money than any other team. Our net spend since 2016 is below Arsenal, United, Chelsea and Spurs. I can understand why fans of Bolton or West Ham might be annoyed that we're suddenly spending way more than them. But isn't it kind of petty for fans of Arsenal and Madrid to call us financial dopers because we are now spending similar amounts to them? Getting so worked up because we allegedly broke some bad faith accounting laws does seem hysterically tribal to me.
We allegedly broke some bad faith accounting laws. I mean, these are the rules of the company. Like, you're just describing the rules as bad faith. Like, you're dismissing the rules. You're like, well, we don't like those. We think those rules shouldn't be that way. So, you know, to break, if breaking these wrong rules is a crime, then we're guilty. You know, it's like,
but don't quote us on that.
Yeah, like, you know, like, is there a claim there that Arsenal are spending as much money as Manchester City?
Since our net spend since 2016 is below Arsenal.
Our net spend is below Arsenal. What's the? Does that include salaries?
I'm presuming it's just transfers. Net spend is normally people use that phrase. They're talking about transfers.
Yeah, there's a good reason for that. I mean, you know, there's one about the four, we've had the same four clubs in England qualifying for the Champions League every year. Mm. The money you get from being in the Champions League would mean nobody else could ever challenge them. Well, that's not true. I mean, actually, the years of the biggest consistency in terms of the same clubs getting into the Champions League are the years before the introduction of financial fair play, which is 2009-10. That was when they brought it in. So from 2010, I think, was when they started coming into effect. So if you look at, say, the Premier League has been sending four teams to the Champions League since 2002-03, mm-hmm. Or was it 2001-02? But I was looking at this yesterday. So in 2002-03, there were three of the four teams that qualified had been in the competition the previous year. They were at the time Manchester United, Liverpool, and Arsenal. In 2004, again, three out of four had been in the competition the previous year. 2005, it's three teams. And then for the next six, 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, you had four teams, the same four teams, qualifying for the Champions League every year. They were Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea, and Manchester United. So that's actually the time of the biggest, the most sort of stability in terms of the composition of this elite group of teams. So if anything, it appears that the introduction of financial fair play has changed that, you know, because we've had a couple of seasons since then where it was the same four teams. 2013, same four teams as the year before. 2014 was the same four teams as the year before. 2019 was the same four teams as the year before. But 2011 was the first year City got in. City are the only team that have been there every year since then, mm-hmm. right? Every single year. They haven't missed it a single time since they first made it, you know, so... and since then, we've had but it's not as though this has resulted in a sort of, oh, you know, Manchester City have broken the tyranny that was holding everything in place, and now everyone can, you know, Ewok United can get into the Champions League. You know, it's still actually really Fuck. Consistent. You know, like, I mean, we've done it. We've yeah. cobbled together a team. You know, we've,
yeah. yeah.
No, it's still 2011, three out of the four. 2012, three out of four. 2013, four out of four. 2014, four out of four. 15, three. 2016, three. 2017 and 18, you get a bit of a shakeup. They're the only seasons when you have two. So that's to say two of the teams that made it the year before didn't make it in the next season. One of them is because Leicester won the league, which was, you know, and then the season after that was, wasn't it Chelsea? It was like Mourinho, the Chelsea collapse, which was sort of, what? Mm. So this is, and then it goes back to like 4-3-3-3-3-3-3-3. So it's actually been pretty stable. This is the first year. This season is the first season when you've only got one team who qualified, who are going to qualify again. That's assuming Manchester United and Newcastle each manage to get a point, which is all they need to be mathematically sure. So this has actually, this season has seen the biggest collapse of elite clubs, you know, in terms of who was competitive last season, that there's ever been in the Premier League. The teams in question are obviously Liverpool, Chelsea and Tottenham, all of whom have had just this really nightmarish season. you know, I mean, in different ways. The Chelsea one was probably the most interesting. Mm. You know, the Spurs one is possibly the most disappointing. Just how can this keep getting gradually worse? Mm. You know, with Liverpool, they've had a bad season, but at least over the last couple of months have shown maybe there's something to work with. You know, they're sort of ending on a more positive note, but it came a bit too late. So what I'm saying is I don't think the claim in the email that, oh, this has shaken everything up. It's not. I mean, it just has replaced. Man City are just the team, the immovable team. Nobody can get them out of there.
Cass asks, shouldn't the average football fan be delighted that City's investment has shaken up English football and that there are different teams qualifying?
Well, I mean, as I said, it's shaken up English football to the extent that Man City now qualify every single year. Mm. You know, that's not really shaking up English football. That's just appointing Man City to a level above every other team. And now what's one of the three other teams that's going to get in is Saudi Arabia's team. Mm. So this is actually the force that shakes up English football, we see. And the previous big shake-up was Chelsea, which, as we can now see, was a kind of a state project, a state-sanctioned project. You know what I mean? It was like, where we consider it worthwhile spending more money than has ever seemed feasible on this for reasons, you know.
On the first point, isn't it fair to say we followed the spirit of FFP, if not the letter of the law?
I mean, that's hilarious. Like, we follow the spirit, not the letter. I mean, well, you're deciding that. Like, we follow the...
What does he say about the original reason for financial fair play was that so clubs wouldn't hit the wall, basically?
Yeah, essentially, which was part of it. But also, notionally anyway, it's supposed to stop clubs with limitless resources, stop clubs with massive resources blowing other teams out of the water. And it's meant to help, as far as I recall, when this was first brought in. It was supposed to be good for the lesser...
Well, it's meant to establish a link between spending and income.
Yeah.
Right, that's basically what it is. So you don't have like what Portsmouth?
Yeah.
When they had like a Russian guy running it and they spent tons of money and then they won the FA Cup and then he was like, actually, no. Yeah. And then they just, what league are Portsmouth even in now? Mm. So these, or Leeds were obviously a classic example before then, where they were spending more than they could afford and ended up blowing up the club under Ridsdale. I mean, that's 20 years ago now. I mean, these are the kinds of things that were happening. But I just think it's, you know, when you look at that, well, FFP was meant to entrench the elite. Well, ever since it was actually introduced, this elite that's being talked about in this email has been less entrenched. You know, it coincides almost exactly. So yeah, I don't know if that point really stands up. But you know, it's kind of like, I've had people saying to me, oh, you know, I can't believe why is everyone talking about this now? It's just about clicks, right? This is like, it's like the team has won the title. This is a time at which everybody is like, oh, this team has won the title. Let us salute this team and their achievements. The fact is that this team has got all these charges against it, right? This is like an ongoing situation, which is going to drag on apparently for years. And this is, you're meant to just not mention this.
Well, the timing question is like literally the entire idea of, a team gets relegated or a team qualifies for the Champions League or a team wins the league is that at the moment that happens, you sit back and say, how did this team achieve the thing they just achieved? I mean, and that's literally, it couldn't be more germane to the point.
Absolutely.
Like it is a bizarre thing.
Is it slightly, to go back to say footballing matters in one of the sections here, is it somewhat unfair though on Guardiola and his players to analyse it as though it's inevitable that they win the league every year and it's inevitable that they're going to win the Champions League, which is the way it's done. When you consider where they came from this season, and that was, I'm looking back on a piece that Jonathan Liu wrote after Arsenal beat Manchester United. When was this? 22nd of January. And he said, Arsenal will be champions. Where is it here? Arsenal will be champions. It's about time someone committed this to print. You know, this is what people were saying back then. It's months ago now, but it's written up now as though it was inevitable they were going to do this, and it all feels so anticlimactic. And yet earlier this season, if we don't even have to cast our minds back very far, 6, 7, 8 weeks ago, people were thinking Arsenal were going to win the league.
Yeah.
That was a very long way to go back to my original thing, that basically the players and the team get no credit really from any neutrals because of the club they work for, when actually the stuff they're doing is, whatever about what you think of the club, is pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, what they're doing is incredible. You know, as a football team, has anyone ever seen anything like these guys? Anything quite like them? You know, they're obviously a brilliantly coached team. We know this. All the Guardiola teams are like this. They have that quality that Barcelona and Bayern, when Guardiola coached them, have, of the very fluid way that they move the ball. I mean, all his coaching seems to be about, whenever you hear anyone talking about his coaching, it's always, he's saying, no, you need to turn 90 degrees. You need to open your shoulder. You need to open your body. Like, this is Guardiola spent his entire life telling people they just need to turn, open out a bit. And when the ball comes, control the ball with this foot and then pass it with this foot, you know, pass the ball to that foot with this curve on it so that he can do it a little bit quicker. Like, you know, these saves save little seconds all over the pitch, and this is what enables us to move the ball faster than anybody else. But also, you know, what you see them doing now is actually a lot of the time they get the ball and just stop. And I don't think they used to do this, certainly not as much anymore, but like, you see a City player receive the ball and stop and wait, and then he gets pressed, and then Stones is particularly good at it. You'll see he's kind of standing there. He's almost got like his foot cocked over the ball, and he's waiting to see what the defender does. And then he just stabs without sort of moving, without taking another touch, stab a stationary ball, pass it to an opponent like this. And this is like, so this is a response to pressing culture, basically, you know, which wasn't as, when Guardiola started, it wasn't really, like, his were the team, it was his team that was pressing more than anybody else. And I mean, I remember in particular was Barcelona against Arsenal, absolutely destroying them in the Champions League in the Emirates. I think they went 2-0 up quite early. Maybe they, was it the season Zlatan played for them? It's in the Pep period. And just being blown away by the intensity of the game, not so much the passing, the quality of the goals, but like the impossibility. Arsenal found it impossible to hold on to the ball against them. How are they just swarming all over us everywhere? So this has been, now I'm not going to say everybody does that, but teams press now. Everybody presses to some extent. And you can see City reacting to this, like that kind of pausing. When you get the ball, I'm talking about like defenders and midfielders getting the ball and build up, and not, and so the kind of conventional way to think about it might have been, oh, you know, quick, move it fast, don't give them any time, don't give them any moment to breathe. He's actually doing the opposite, like in the sense of, wait, stop, see what they have to do something, and then we take advantage of what they do. So I mean, this is all brilliant.
I just wanted to give Cass Crockett here something to work off, you know, some.
This is brilliant, and you know, the players they've got. You know, Kevin De Bruyne is consistently a brilliant footballer. Bernardo Silva can do absolutely everything. You know, Grealish is like playing really well. I feel like I'm back to my Villa self. I saw him saying, you know, because I always drag him over for the interviews. And then you've got Haaland, who's just like, what? Like,
what are we even looking at here?
What is this? You know, I mean, it was with Haaland, wasn't it? I can't remember if it was Match of the Day or Sky. We had one of the kind of posts. Michael Richards, by the way, on both. I mean, he was so knackered. Was like, how are you on Match of the Day too again?
A lot of enthusiasm to
he is. He is a pundit who does rely on high energy levels.
Yeah,
it's fair to say.
But you know, is it Haaland? Is it, you know, his pace, his power, his finishing, his movement, his intelligence? You know, what is it? And it's like, well, obviously it's all of those things. You know, they're kind of inseparable. What makes him unique is the level to which he's got, like, these outstanding attributes all combined in one player of a kind of a new type, or like a kind of a version of an old type that's so new. It feels like a kind of, we've never seen anything like this before. But it's kind of the same thing with the club as well, you know? I mean, it's like brilliant coaching, wonderful players. They're all here in the same room. Isn't that something? You know, what a job they've done in the back office to get all these guys in the one room, you know what I mean? And then there's these 115 charges. Well, there's always going to be haters when you hit this kind of success. But it's sort of like, yeah, these things are actually, there's a link there. There's a relationship between these things. I mean, when Jonathan Liu wrote that article, January 22nd, I think he said. So that City were having a bit of a struggle then, post-World Cup. You know, they had more players involved in the World Cup than anyone else because of that eye for talent that they have, which to a higher level than any other team. And there was a bit of a struggle. Things were malfunctioning, a couple of dodgy results. And then the dramatic moment of the season, in terms of Guardiola's man management, let's say, of the City squad, the defenestration of Joao Cancelo. Joao Cancelo, who we'd all got used to thinking of, oh, Cancelo, you know, what a super brain he is. This guy is like, he really just makes everything tick, you know. And he's got Grealish there just giving him the ball all the time, you know, just passing the ball back to your ball, sir. And then Cancelo does something. And so he'd become a really important player, but had not been performing, was struggling a bit with the, you know, Pep is looking to try and how am I going to, what's the system? He's looking for a system which enables him to have Haaland's, you know, running riot, but also control the games and not leave themselves open to the counter, which he hates. And Cancelo's struggling with this. Remember, Cancelo was playing on the right, was it, against Chelsea, played really badly, got subbed off at halftime, has a row with Guardiola. Guardiola boots him out of the club. Now, that is a luxury that not a lot of other managers have. You know, it's ruthless. It's great man management. You know, he's it's pour encourager les autres. You know? Let's fuck out Joao Cancelo. And then look into the eyes of everyone else in the dressing room and say, anyone else want to go with
any
Joao?
Of you mugs fancy a go with the big man?
Yeah. Anyone? No? All right, gentlemen. You know. So all I'm saying is this is like a lot of other managers might have had to try and fit Joao Cancelo into the system instead of just booting him. But, you know, this is, again, it's all linked. Like Haaland's strength and power and movement and intelligence and insight into the game and all of those things. They're all part of the same organism. So it's difficult to sort of consider the one, you know, the brilliance without looking also at how are they able to do this. You know, I mean, there was that piece done a while ago by John Byrne Murdoch in the Financial Times, which I mean, this was in February, I think, and his piece was about you know, in football there's like a link between I think he starts off the piece by saying something like, oh, you know, the Lineker quote about football, you run 22 men run around for 90 minutes and at the end the Germans win. And he's like, well, you know, it's actually 22 men run around for hours, and then the team with the bigger wage bill wins. You know, because of the very close link that's been established between the amount you're spending on the wages of the players and the success that you have in terms of points. And then produced a couple of graphs which really were striking to look at. One of them showing the performance of Premier League clubs in the period 2015 to 2023, which is to say most of, though not all, of the Guardiola era. There was Pellegrini was there for the first season of that. And it's a line that shows the trend line showing the relationship between the average points the team gets and the amount of money that you're spending on salary. So what you get is a curve that goes up, you know, there it is, Owen. There's the curve. So right down in this bottom, you know, towards the left, we see Cardiff City overperforming their tiny wage budget. Huddersfield slightly underperforming theirs. Remember,
everybody's going to have to imagine this.
Jurgen Klopp's mate. And it goes up, you know, and the more you spend, the more points you get. And up the top, we've got Arsenal slightly overperforming in this period. Chelsea and Liverpool spending similar amounts, overperforming slightly. Manchester United spending more than them, but underperforming. And way up here at the top, appearing to inhabit an entirely separate realm of mathematics is Manchester City, right? Who are like way outperforming their budget by a margin that nobody else can get close to. So what's going on there?
Careful husbandry of their financial resources is what it looks like to me.
There's another one there. You know, average number of points per season above the number predicted based on wage bills. Again, this would be better if you could see the graph. But just trust me. Again, we've got some teams do better. You know, are more efficient at converting spend into points. The second most efficient team is Brighton. You know, followed by Tottenham. This is 2015 to 2023. For a lot of the time, Tottenham were punching above their weight. Leeds, Liverpool, Watford. We're going down. You know, in the lower part of this, teams that are you know seem to be wasting some money. Cut to the chase here,
come on.
Manchester United there, Aston Villa, Sunderland, Swansea, Norwich. But again, right up the top, in a sort of completely different league, it's like there's different rules are applying to this. It's Man City, averaging 15 points, overperforming by an average of 15 points compared to what you would expect.
Yeah, careful husbandry of their financial resources. I said it a minute ago.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is like one explanation for that is obviously this is the Guardiola effect. What you're seeing there is the Guardiola effect. This is what happens when you've got a genius who's got a level of his level of insight is it's just
15 points a season.
He's working on a different paradigm. But I'll leave it to John Byrne Murdoch to spell out what these this graph is leading towards. Such an extreme divergence from the historical trend raises an obvious question. How have they managed to reach a level of performance that would typically be associated with the team spending tens of billions more? One possibility is that just like other more modest overperformers, Brighton and Liverpool, City have mastered the arts of data-driven recruitment to maximise the on-pitch value of every pound they spend. The additional factor of employing arguably the best coach in the world, Pep Guardiola, provides a substantial extra boost. This is certainly plausible. Since Guardiola's arrival, the Citizens have been the best performing team in the league every year across a raft of different metrics. However, among the more than 100 allegations of financial rule-breaking leveled at City by the Premier League last month is a more ominous possible explanation of the club's outside success, that it could have been paying some of its playing and coaching staff additional fees not disclosed in its accounts. To be clear, the club has denied any wrongdoing. The statistics presented here provide the what, not the why. Or the how, but for as long as the Premier League allows a meritocracy to become a plutocracy, its integrity and credibility will be in jeopardy. So the argument there is that actually this Man City dot, which you see floating way above the trend line, should actually be over here on the trend line, just sort of, you know, a little bit further along, over to the right. So that would be that's the suggestion that's raised by these numbers that John Byrne Murdoch supplied. Now, it's difficult to really separate this again, you know. So I'm sorry, I know there are people like, oh, I can't believe you're talking about this. How can you not talk about it? You know, it's just, it's like, if this is happening again and again, you know, if they're winning the league again and again, in a way that, like, Arsenal have really made this season look a lot better than it otherwise would. These other teams are sort of collapsing. That never seems to happen here. You know what I mean? They don't seem to go through that collapse phase that we've seen. So, yeah, I find it hard to understand how you're not supposed to mention this.
Just to mention again, Manchester City deny all these charges, and they welcomed the review of the matter by the Independent Commission. So we have to see how that plays out as well.
Yeah, they said there was a comprehensive body of irrefutable evidence that would essentially clear them of these charges. So it would be great if they could bring that forward now, because this is kind of hanging over everything. And, you know, is it destroying the league? Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, I had an incredible evening of watching sport, I have to say, on Saturday.
Well, I admired you, Ken. You were texting me about the Liverpool game.
I responded to a text.
I read something like, wow, this is amazing. Wow, so exciting. This is absolutely unbelievable. Sent at 4:56.
Just 10 minutes after the start of the most dramatic Champions Cup final of all time. Ken then gets back on touch going, yeah, amazing. You know?
Well, I thought they were talking about Firmino.
Yeah.
Well, it was Simon Hick and Mark Horgan, I thought.
Yeah, well, they're super red.
It was just as Firmino scored, they were like, oh, wow. You know, so I thought that's what they were talking about. But of course, there was this rugby game on. So I did switch over to it.
Mm.
And I have to say, I'm glad that I did so. I really am glad that
why,
I did.
Why
so.
Is that? Because you saw such a thrilling display of the best of rugby football.
I saw Irish sporting history.
Mm.
You know, I think it's up. I think it's the top. I think it's the top one. I think it's the number one. I've got some friends who love rugby.
Mm-hmm.
They always say things to me like, "If Ireland win the World Cup, it will be the greatest achievement in the history of Irish sport." They say these things. And it's with those people in mind that I have to hand the crown for the biggest bottle job in the history of Irish sport. At last, you are deservedly top of one of these lists.
You stayed very quiet during the rugby podcast, Ken, despite being on air for some of it. So it's all coming out now.
Mm. I just
thought, well, he knew he was speaking to a different audience than the other show. Yeah, he knows he's a very safe crowd here.
You know, everything was there. You know, it was all there. The great and the good of Dublin. We're all there. to see this. Everyone was there. You know, Leinster Rangers looked up the ground.
Every barrister in a 15-mile radius of Lansdowne Road was there.
I'd say they recognised like half the faces. This celebrity crowd there to see a moment of history. It was incredible. But then I was thinking, I mean, Arsenal, there was obviously Arsenal, there was Nottingham Forest, there was Bayern. Bayern completely blew up at home. You know, they lost to Leipzig. They're going to lose the league now because Dortmund surely can't bottle it again. They can't. They've already done it twice. It can't happen again. Right?
I just looked at the Bundesliga table. They're both playing the teams in 9th and 10th in an 18-team league. So it's literally like lads couldn't be more on the beach than Cologne and Mainz.
Well, it's Mainz. So it's a Tuchel Klopp Dortmund Mainz derby to win the league, to win the first title. I mean, I was thinking, how great is this for a guy like Marco Reus? You know, he joined Dortmund in 2012 and they just won the league twice in a row, and every single season since then it's just been Bayern winning the league and him getting injured over and over and over and over and over again, and it's finally going to happen. And what happened to Bayern this season is one of the great stories. Well,
the Nagelsmann thing right in the middle of it.
Just like, you know, then the side of these guys, Kahn and Salihamidzic, sitting there having concocted this total mess. And, you know, Tuchel is kind of like really damaged by this now. And I can't really see him. I'm not sure he's going to be there much longer. You know, this whole, they brought him in. He was going to be like Nagelsmann, he was doing okay, but we didn't really like him. And this guy is going to deliver. And he's just kind of failed on all fronts. But that wasn't the biggest thing. What I did think on, though, was, you know, for all the people who talk about the city charges and the toxic effect of that loss of trust and blah, 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 there isn't really any humiliation generator like sport. It just produces these images of humiliation to savor for, you know, it's a nasty thing.
Munster Raj fans certainly enjoying Leinster's humiliation, for example.
That's what it's all about. You know, but it's like Arsenal's humiliation, Bayern's humiliation, you know, Leinster's humiliation. Like, this is what it's all about. You know, serve up some more meat, you know, like to be slaughtered. And that's what it's doing. You know, and sport will never lose that wonderful power that it has. But the one other thing I want to talk about here is what was happening in La Liga last night, which has turned into an international incident. So this stuff with Vinicius Jr. has been happening all season in Spain, where he's been racially abused by fans of various clubs. There was a particularly bad example of it with Atletico Madrid. But it's happened in a lot of places. Now, he was playing at Valencia last night. Valencia in a bit of trouble relegation-wise. Valencia won the game 1-0, so they seem to be kind of out of that. But the main thing that was happening was the game was interrupted because Vinicius was protesting against the racist abuse that he was getting from the stands. Now, at one point, he even went over to point out an individual in the stands who he said was racially abusing him. So there was a couple of stoppages for this. The game goes to injury. It's like virtually injury time. Valencia winning 1-0. Madrid get a free kick, don't score. The goalkeeper saves it, I think. But what happens then is, as the ball is going, there's going to be a corner. A scuffle then develops involving like most of the players. And this goes on and it's kind of chaotic and you don't know what's happening. And eventually it's sort of pulled apart. And then the referee is going, I think he booked Vinicius at this point, goes over to the VAR, sees, and what the VAR shows him is Vinicius turning and lashing out with his hand at Hugo Duro, the Valencia player, who flops to the ground as though, you know, in the time-honored manner. So the referee then goes back and sends off Vinicius. What the VAR did not show him was that this same Hugo Duro had, for the previous 10 seconds, been holding Vinicius in a rear naked choke, elbow around, arm around the throat to put, you know, pulling him back from involvement. Now, I'm sorry, but you can't do that. You cannot do that, right? And if Vinicius then turns around, when he's finally released from this grip, you know, a choke which can render you unconscious, you know, if done properly, this is to defuse the situation, I suppose. If he then turns around and lashes out at this guy, I can understand that. I can understand. I'm not saying that he shouldn't be sent off for it because, you know, letter of the law, you do that, then that's going to be a red card. But the whole situation with him being baited by the crowd, racially abused, the match being stopped, the referee, as Ancelotti pointed out, opened the protocol for racism, and then he's the guy sent off after VAR show like a stitch up of not actually showing the incident. This is incredible. So Vinicius goes on Twitter and starts talking about, this is not the first time, nor the second, nor the third. Racism is considered normal in La Liga. The competition considers it normal. The federation considers it normal. The rivals encourage it. The championship that once belonged to Ronaldinho, Ronaldo, Cristiano, and Messi today belongs to the racists. A beautiful nation which welcomed me and which I love, but which it now has accepted to export to the world the image of a racist country. I'm sorry for those Spaniards who disagree, but today in Brazil, Spain is known as a country of racists. I'm strong and I will go all the way against the racists, even if it is far away from here. Ancelotti says, what we saw today is unacceptable, an entire stadium chanting racist slurs. I asked him if he wanted to keep playing and he stayed in the game. La Liga have a problem here. For me, Vinicius is the most important player in the world. La Liga has a problem. These episodes of racism have to stop. He's in his press conference doing talking about this. A journalist I saw arguing with him at length, though the fans weren't saying mono mono, which is monkey. They were saying tonto tonto, which is dumbass, you're stupid, you know. Ancelotti says, well, if they're saying that, why did the ref introduce the racism protocol? Maybe you need to ask him about this. Real Madrid have put out a statement saying, they say we strongly condemn the events that took place yesterday against our player Vinicius Jr. These events represent a direct attack on the social and democratic model of coexistence of our state based on the rule of law. Real Madrid believes such attacks also constitute a hate crime and has therefore filed the corresponding report with the Attorney General's office, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
What's happened, though, is that Tebas, the head of the league, said, we already made two dates to talk to you about racism. You didn't turn up. So, you know, what are you complaining about, Vinicius? You know what I mean? Basically sort of putting it back on the player. But what's very unusual about this situation, and why I say that it's an international incident, is that you now have the president of Brazil, Lula, who's at the conference in Hiroshima, I think, calling out La Liga, it's a disgrace. That a poor boy who is winning in his life, becoming one of the best in the world, certainly the best at Real Madrid, is insulted in every stadium he goes to. We must not allow racism and fascism to take over in the sport. This is the president of Brazil calling out La Liga. Brazil's human rights minister calls the Spanish authorities and the entities that govern its soccer criminal. Undeniable acceptance of racism. Vinicius, I will be on your side to hold those that attack you accountable. The mayor of Rio de Janeiro is calling Javier Tebas a clown. The president of the Brazilian Soccer Confederation also put out a statement. Practically every club in Brazil has posted a statement supporting Vinicius here. I saw Kylian Mbappe doing this. Richarlison said they always did whatever they could to stop the blacks from coming into the top. They enslaved, marginalized, and killed, but they will never knock down those who were born to be big. History forgets the rats and makes those fighting these bad people much bigger. I'm with you always, Vinny. So this is one of the biggest sort of racism scandals I've ever seen. I mean, Valencia said we've got rid of the two, or we've arrested two people or banned two people who were doing. It's like you can hear the people in the crowd like this. I was at Valencia before and saw an episode like this in 2002. I was in the city and they happened to be playing Liverpool in a Champions League game and went along to this, and it was incredible. I mean, this is more than 20 years ago, but there was in the Liverpool team, El Hadji Diouf, Emil Heskey, Salif Jow. I think they had four black players in the team. I can't remember who the four were. But what I do remember is every time any one of them touched the ball, hearing ooh, 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 from like huge sections of this stadium. They could say, oh, you know, that's 20 years ago, things have changed. Doesn't seem like it. It doesn't seem like it, and they don't really take it seriously. And when you see these people arguing, well, no, this guy Vinicius, you know, why doesn't it happen to all the black players? Well, actually, I have seen it happen to just people for being black in Valencia. I have seen that myself. Maybe they're saying it doesn't happen as much as it did in 2002. I don't know. But it's still happening. I mean, this is a massive embarrassment for Spain. It's a huge embarrassment for La Liga.
Is it naive to think that this maybe is a moment where things change, that this become such an international...
Well, I mean, it has to, really, because, I mean, this is, you know, I think this just... What would need to happen in order for them to take action, if not this?
Yeah. Okay, that's it for today. Thanks, Ken. Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you, Ken.
Owen, thank you, Kieran.
Thanks for listening. There's loads of good stuff in the World Service this week. All episodes are ad-free if you sign up on secondcaps.com. The Second Cast podcast, it's also part of something, Murph, a community.
It's called the Acast. The Acast Creator Network is what it's called on. That's the name of it now.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.